Welcome to A Time of Hope with highlights of last Sunday's worship service. I'm Russell Cobb, the pastor of United Church of Christ of California and the Salem United Church of Christ. Salem's worship is at 8:30, California Sunday School is at 9:30, and their worship is at 10:30. Please join us in person or you can catch us online at our website. This Sunday, as we finish up 2024, we will look at the seven statements of Jesus from the cross to help us focus on how we need to approach 2025. We'll talk about forgiveness, heaven, and expressing our hearts to God, among other things. On Christmas Eve and Christmas, we took a deep look at the manger that Jesus was born in. Now we will look to the cross to help us live the life that God wants us to live. I pray you had a Merry Christmas and that you have a safe and happy New Year. Remember, we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works. Thank you for listening.
Our fourth Advent candle, the Candle of Love, was lighted by confirmand Jess Medlin and his family, his mother Brittany, his father Jess, and his sister Charlie.
David was 30 years old when he became king of Israel, and he reigned for 40 years. Now David wasn't perfect, but he put his trust in God and served him well. And God blessed King David, and Israel flourished during his reign. After God had given him success against his enemies, a palace was built for this great king of Israel. When the palace was finished and David was settled in his new home, he called for Nathan the prophet and said,
"It is not right that I am living in a palace of cedar while the house of God remains in a tent."
David wanted to build a temple for God to take the place of the tent that had served as God's home for many years. That night, God came to Nathan with a word for David. God would have a temple as David wanted, but it would not be built by David. But that wasn't all that God wanted David to hear that night. God wanted David to hear these words.
"This is what the Almighty Lord says. I took you from the pasture and from the following the flock to be ruler over my people Israel. I have been with you wherever you have gone, and I have cut off all your enemies from before you. Now I will make your name great. And I will provide a place for my people Israel, and will plant them so that they can have a home of their own. The Lord declares to you that the Lord himself will establish a house for you when your days are over and you rest with your fathers. I will rise up your offspring to succeed you. I will establish his kingdom. He is the one who build a house for me, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever."
God made a covenant of love with David that day, a covenant in which God promised never to take his love away from David or from his offspring. The line of David would remain on the throne of Israel forever. You see, from the line of King David would come the King of all kings. This king would save God's people, not just for a time, but forever. God's love is so much more than our own, and we celebrate that today as we remember how he sent his son, a king in heaven, to earth to be with us. What love.
Today we relight the first three candles of the Advent wreath, the candle of hope, peace, and joy. Now we relight the fourth candle of Advent. This is the candle of love.
Jesus demonstrated self-giving love in his ministry as the Good Shepherd. Advent is a time for kindness, thinking of others, and sharing with others. It is a time to love as God loved us by giving us his most precious gift. As God is love, let us be love also. From the Gospel of John we hear.
Special music is Stacy Frederick singing a beautiful rendition of O Holy Night.
Holy night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of the dear. Thank you, Carla, and thank you, Stacy. What a beautiful special. What a wonderful children's time is too. Well, Holly, thank you for that. And so glad to have everybody here this morning. You got a special blessing. Colton and Peter are going to join me in the sermon today. We're looking at this morning, Luke chapter 2, that Mary and Joseph, an 80-mile trip. That doesn't sound much. That's kind of basically what we drove yesterday from here up to Macon, Missouri, and back, you know, 80 miles. It don't sound like much. We can get up there in an hour and a half, 2 hours, we can make it there. But for Mary and Joseph, it would have been an 8 to 9, 10-day trip, walking and riding. And as a lady, 8 to 9 months pregnant along the way, it would not have been the most comfortable occasion for either one of them. But it was prompted by what was said by the Roman emperor at the time. And if you want to join me in Luke chapter 2, I'm just going to read the first 7 verses, very familiar verses. And it says, "In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. This was the first censor that took place while Quirinius was governor of Syria. And everyone went through their own town to register. So Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee, which is in the northern part of Israel, to Judea, to Bethlehem, the town of David, in the southern part of Israel, just south, about 6-8 miles south of Jerusalem, because he belonged to the house and the line of David. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for the baby to be born, and she gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger because there was no guest room available for them at that time." And so we see what prompted their journey was not to go back and celebrate the holidays. It was because a census was being commanded to be taken. We see that censuses here were taken every 14 years back in that day. We do it every 10 years in our day. We see that Caesar Augustus is the one that commanded it. The word Augustus means exalted one. They thought of themselves a little bit higher than man, and in some cases even thought that they were deity. But the census was given to remind the people that they were an occupied people, that Rome was in power, that Rome was the one in authority, and that they were paying to them. We wonder why they had to go back to that part of to Bethlehem for Joseph. It was because that was where his family heritage was from. That was probably where the property titles for any land or property that they had. So he went back there to register. For me and my family, that would be like going back to Forsyth, Missouri, or maybe Kirbyville, Missouri, in that area when our family came back there in the 1800s to settle and get land there at that time. But it was a reminder to Mary and Joseph that they were not, everything was not the way that they wanted it to be. They had to get up immediately and take off for Bethlehem to take care of this thing. And probably Caesar and King Herod probably thought that they were the ones in charge. They were the ones that command. They wanted to count the whole Roman world. They were the most important people in this story at this time. But from God's point of view, the two most important people in this story were Mary and Joseph, a very poor couple from a very little town that nobody had probably heard of, to go to another little town. But we see in scripture that we just read by Carla in Galatians chapter 4 that at this perfect time, God chose for this event to happen. Caesar and King Herod thought they were the ones pulling the strings. They were the puppet masters of the time, not knowing that God was the chess man, the chess master, moving the chess pieces on the board to get Mary and Joseph to the right place at the right time to have the Messiah to be born. I'm sure as Mary and Joseph took every step, an uncomfortable step, not knowing exactly where they're going and not exactly what was going to happen, they were reminded that they were on a mission from God and that God was with them every step of the way, just like that we are in our lives today. And that's a reminder to us that God is always in control. Now, Colton's going to tell us about the exact route that they took and how important that was to the story.
As Reverend Cobb said, the journey from Nazareth to Bethlehem was about 80 miles. That's about the same distance if you drive up to Moberly or I can't think of the town's name I just looked up. It's 80 miles. You picture 80 miles. That's how long it was. And in his infinite wisdom, knowing about what we have today, the Lord chose a time before the automobile and the train, all to add in to how humble the birth of Jesus was. Now, when they started in Nazareth, they had two routes. They could cut through Samaria or they could go around it. It's believed they went through Samaria for a few reasons. Number one, the Jewish people did not like the Samaritans. It's the very well-known story of the Good Samaritan. They found they were unclean and impure, and they had all kinds of, they had Jewish influence and influence of many religions in theirs. So most Jews would take the route to avoid it. So, of course, that would have been the path most traveled. There'd have been thousands and thousands of people on this trail trying to get through that you couldn't get through. And it's said that faithful Jews were found to have gone through Samaria. They had faith in God. They have faith that it was all in his hands. And Mary and Joseph, none more faithful than two people who had an angel of the Lord tell them what to do, tell them that God is with them. You know, this route straight through Samaria was a pretty historic route. Thousands of years of Jewish history. For example, this was the route that Abraham took when God promised to give the land to Abraham and his descendants forever. Along this route was the place where Jacob dreamed of angels ascending and descending a ladder to heaven. They would have stopped to have drank from a well that Jacob dug over 1,000 years before. They'd have passed the place where Joseph was buried and the place where Joshua fought in the Battle of Jericho. This was the road that Daniel traveled when he was led away into Babylonian captivity. This was the route God's people traveled when they returned to their homeland to rebuild the temple. They went along a route that was filled with the rich history of God's people. Unbeknownst to, or known to them by the angels, they were about to do one of the most, or the most important thing in the Bible that every bit of that history pointed to, was to have the birth of God's Son, Jesus Christ. It wasn't an easy journey. I think back, I hate to drive to Columbia. You couldn't really get me to walk to Columbia. You'd have to be something pretty ornery chasing me to get me to walk to Columbia. You know, a long time ago, when I was a kid, I'm going to tell a story that's going to make my mother go like that. My grandpa bought him a van. When they built this van, Soul Train was on season 2. It had an old TV in it. It was in a wood box right there between the front two captain's chairs right there. And, you know, you didn't need a seatbelt in a van like that to a 6-year-old kid. And Grandpa drove that thing. I can't tell you how old this nasty van. It had them window curtains that would go like that, and you could shut them, and they were elastic. And I'd stand in that back seat, you know, old bench seat, and I'd just stand up and run around back there. And my father loves me very much. But he said, "You better sit down. You better sit down." And then the third time, I remember we were going past the turnoff to go up to the Latham School, and I didn't sit down, and directly he hit the brake, and I flew forward ever so daintily right into that TV. And when I smile, you see that little dimple right there. Yeah, they don't build stuff like they used to. That TV was perfectly fine, I promise you that much. You know, we've all gone through trails and travels, and we've all had faith. We need to have faith like Mary and Joseph did. My goodness. We have a lot of mothers in this room, and show of hands, when you were pregnant, would you want to walk 90 miles? Don't be shy. I know. Well, she did. She walked the whole way, and you know, the darkest hour is right before dawn. The very worst part of this whole trip was the last leg of it, right before they got into Jericho, which is the lowest city on the globe, way down in there. From Jericho up to Jerusalem and Bethlehem, was 3,500 feet up, up, up. 3,500 feet they walked that last leg of the journey, knowing that they were going to arrive to take the census and have the birth of the Lord's Son. And you know, an interesting thing that was noted in a reading I did was the whole time they walked, they would have seen that temple of Jehovah. The whole time they would have seen their destination in the distance, and the child that Mary was carrying would someday make that temple obsolete, because the birth of that son and then 33 years later, the death of that son, meant that God no longer resides in just a temple, that God resides in each and every one of us through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. Because of that journey they took, because of the journeys Jesus took and the root destination he came to, God resides in us, and we're filled with so many blessings. If I counted them, I know Doug Danforth would want to get out of here and go eat some dinner, so I ain't gonna start on it. And I got a few more stories I'll tell you later, but we're just getting to the destination, and I want Pete to come up here, and he's going to tell you all about the turmoil that continued after this.
All right. Good morning. So today I'm going to talk about their journey once they actually get into Bethlehem and what they kind of could expect to see and also what they went through as far as trying to find a place for the night. So first, as they arrive there, I'm sure they're tired and sore. I mean, it's hard. I did cross country as a freshman, but 3.2 miles, that was a little far. I don't run like that anymore. I can't hardly do it. I know Bryce does his marathons, but he can keep that to himself. I don't want any part of that. But as you can imagine, they were pretty sore. And as they arrive into Bethlehem, I have here what a standard inn kind of looked like back then. It wasn't anything fancy. It was a big square building. And it was made out of some kind of brick from stone or, you know, anything that they had, mud. And what it was this big square with a large entrance into the center. In that center was a well. All these inns had water. They were always guaranteed to have water, but they did not always have food. So you had to bring your own food, or you had to get it and prepare it yourself. And in these rooms, they were generally long, just standard tiny rooms. They weren't furnished. There was nothing in them. Basically, just enough room for you to lay down and sleep. And we know that that Mary and Joseph could not stay in the inn because generally the livestock from these travelers were kept in that open area outside of the rooms. So we know that they didn't stay there. What we think is that Joseph, we know he had family in Bethlehem, and we believe that he went and stayed there with his family. And I have here what a house kind of looked like back then. What you could expect to find in a traditional house would be there'd be a central room that served as the kitchen and living area, and off of that room would be the sleeping quarters where parents slept. Typically, there'd be a guest room where children slept, but which was yielded to guests when there was company. This was the cataluma. When there were guests, the children slept with the parents or in the main living space. There was also a stable or small barn, you could think of it as a garage, that was either behind the home or, in the case of homes built atop or around caves, beneath the home. The stable protected the animals from predators and thieves at night. Assuming that Joseph's family was of modest income, they would have one guest room, and the guest room would hold bed mats for up to 6 people sleeping side by side. Anyways, we can assume that Joseph had family. It was likely that he had 4 to 5 other siblings, and they probably had their spouses and their kids, so it would make sense that there would not be much room in this standard house. Well, we also run into another problem whenever it came to Mary and Joseph staying in the guest room with the rest of the family. As well, Leviticus talked about, which was one of the old law books, I know you guys know that down there, it was one of the old laws from the Old Testament. And basically, Leviticus chapter 12, verses 1 through 7 kind of states that when a woman gives birth to a son, she becomes unclean until her child is circumcised on the 8th day after he is born. It is discharge of blood and water at childbirth that causes her to be ritually unclean. Just as a woman was considered ritually impure or unclean during her monthly period. Leviticus chapter 15, verses 19 through 23 also notes that anyone who touches a woman or who has a flow of blood will also become ritually unclean until evening. Further, anything she lies on becomes unclean. Anything that touches her becomes unclean. And anyone who touches anything she lies on becomes unclean. So you begin to see the problem here when Mary would have wanted to sleep in the guest room with the rest of the family. It would have made the living space for everybody else. They wouldn't be able to stay in there. So that becomes the problem. They didn't want to kick out the rest of the family just because Mary was pregnant. And as well, she wanted to have her privacy for while she was giving birth. I don't think I'd want to, you know, crowd around me if I was giving birth. Not that I can give birth, but I don't think I'd want a crowd. I don't think they were popping popcorn either to come watch. So anyways, their next best option was to go to the stables and stay out there. It gave her privacy, they wouldn't make anything in the house unclean, and she was able to just be there. I mean, if you think about it, we're about to sing Silent Night, but if you think about it, it probably wasn't a silent night. Now, I've thankfully never been around anyone who's given birth, but I'm sure it's not a pleasant sight or pleasant time to be around. Yeah. Not for a long time, I don't want to be around that, but but anyways, she was able to have her privacy. I'm sure she was still sore, and just, I'm sure she was glad to be able to be alone with just Joseph in that stable. And eventually she had her child, but times still weren't easy then. And another thing I want to note is that maybe you guys knew this, however I did not, is that a crib was actually another name for a cattle trough. I didn't know that, and I was talking with Dad yesterday about this, and he kind of gave me a funny look like, you didn't know that? I mean, I had no idea, and we were feeding calves yesterday, and I was just thinking, man, I'd hate for that to be my bed. It didn't look very comfortable. It was all nasty. I wouldn't want it for a bed. But that just shows you the humbleness and humility that Jesus had when he came into this world and came to us. And that kind of sets the stone for what we could expect to see out of him in those next 33 years of his life. He was always humble, and he always took humility to set our standards for how humble we should be in our daily lives. And if we can just try and even come near to be that humble, we stand a chance. It's not without the grace of God, as Colton kind of talked about, that we couldn't have a chance but to get to heaven. So thankful for Jesus and the story he went on. If we can learn those stories and pass them on, then maybe we have a chance to get to heaven. Thank you.
I'll try to keep it a little more PG. Well, I'm going to make a little conclusion about journeys, and I'm going to tell you another story. I'm not supposed to name names, but my Uncle Justin called me once. We're leaving a lot of details out of this folk story, but he called me a long time ago, between 8th grade year, freshman year, I don't really remember. He said, you want to go coon hunting? I said, sure. And we showed up in Latham, Missouri, a little bit outside of my house. I don't really remember where. And he parked that truck, and it was him and Gatlin. I can't remember who all went. Maybe my Uncle Chad and my cousin Lee showed up and a couple others. And Justin had two coon dogs. And a little fun fact, just because you breed a dog to do something, it ain't born to know how to do that. You know, you leave a coon dog on a chain for 6 years and let him loose, he doesn't know a coon from a squirrel. He doesn't know the difference between the two. And he had that gate on the back of that truck, and down went the gate, and out went that dog like that right there. And he had a GPS tracker, and he watched that dog quarter mile, half a mile, mile, 2 mile, 3 mile. And we go after that dog, folks. We left at 6:30. 1 o'clock in the morning, there's no dog. And we've been out in the woods where Daniel Boone wouldn't dare to go. I'm going to tell you that right now. Oh, my goodness. We walked and walked. It was 18 degrees, and we were wet. And we finally come out. We started in Latham, and when we come out, it's on that field just past 50 before you get into town. We come out in that cornfield. Don't know how. Don't know why. But I come out of that field, and I saw the Lord in the form of a blue Ford F-150 with my Uncle Terry driving in it with the heater going. And he pulled up there, and I walked up looking like Jeremiah Johnson, just dirty and mangy and no dog. And we jump in that Ford, and some of the kids were in the bed of it, and Justin said, well, you want to go out tomorrow if I get that dog? And I said, no, I don't particularly feel like I want to do that. And if there's any animal lovers, have no fear. We didn't find one coon that whole night. Not a thing was hurt in them woods but us, I promise you that much. But you know, that was the journey we had to go through. And we all have to go through journeys in life, and most of the time it's not perfect. This world is imperfect. Most of the time things go wrong. Thankfully, I've never been through something as excruciating as the walk that Mary and Joseph had to go to, but if an angel of the Lord would have come to comfort me, I might have been a little more confident in my abilities in tracking down that ornery coon dog. But we'll all go through things. I can remember the things I've been through in my life, the journey of my grandmother and her sickness, and by the grace of God, it took her home, but it took her a couple of years to get there. You know, the big moral of it is faith, is to never once give up your faith in God, that He is in control, as Russ said. He is the one making the decisions. And God has never made a bad decision. He knows exactly what to do all the time, and He is perfect. So that's what I'll leave you with, is faith in the Lord. No matter what your journey is, He will deliver you. All you have to do is keep believing in Him.
Thank you, Pete and Colton. You just never know what kind of Christmas message you're going to get on Sunday, do you? That's what makes it special, man. Thank you, guys. It's just a special time of year for us to remember that and put it into ourselves and just remember this is real, and God used them and He can use us as well.